everybody. You are listening to my dad on the Handgun World Podcast. Why does he carry a gun? Because he can't carry a cop.
I'm Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. Well, this is a practical show done by a practical, everyday guy like me. I don't come from military or law enforcement. I don't have a gunsmithing background or anything like that. Just a regular guy taking my self-defense seriously, carry a gun every day, do some firearms training on the side, my real job. Is pretty busy, though, these days. So that's good, too. Everything seems to be going fairly well. And for those of you who have been following my show and know that I'm fighting cancer, I'm dictating this podcast while I'm driving over to my oncologist's office to get, hopefully, my last chemotherapy treatment. I'm fighting non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And hopefully, this is chemotherapy treatment number 6, and hopefully this is the last one. I'm going to go through some testing later this month to find out and hopefully get the news that I'm cancer-free. So thank you for all of your prayers. God is the supreme healer, and I have faith in Him that He is going to heal me. And thank you very much. A lot of you have been saying that you've been praying for me and so forth, and I appreciate that very much. All right, well, this episode, I've got a great interview with John Hadaway coming up, and we just talked about a mixture of topics. So I think you're going to like it. There's not just really one topic that we talked about. We did spend a little bit of time kind of going over the class that we taught about a month ago, because there's a lot you can learn from listening to this podcast. There's a lot that you can learn from when you hear two of the instructors, two out of the three instructors that were teaching the class, that was myself and John Hadaway and Ben Branham. When you listen to us talk about what went on at the class, I think you can learn a lot from it. Especially if you're a concealed carrier, you can learn a lot from it. So that's coming up shortly. Now, I'm in the Handgun World mobile studio, folks, so if you see a little, or if you hear, excuse me, if you hear a little background noise, I'm in my my old 2002 Honda Accord, my paid-for car, and I'm driving down the road doing this introduction. Anyway, the Houston class that we have scheduled is sold out, so it's been a great response. We got 16 people signed up for that, and we only have one training bay. So that's our limit right there. That's our limit, one training bay. If we had two training bays, we could open it up to more. You know, like out in Seattle, we've got two training bays out there in Squim at Fort Discovery when Ben and I fly out there to go teach with Glenn Tate. By the way, we do have one opening. We have one more opening for the class with Glenn Tate out in the Seattle area in Squim. So, if you are interested in that, at the time that I am dictating this podcast, we had one cancellation and we have one opening. Email me, bob@handgunworld.com, bob@handgunworld.com, if you are interested in that spot. The one-day class, Ben Branham and I are teaching Beyond Concealed Carry. Our special guest is Glenn Tate, the author of the book series 299 Days. You can get all of his books on my Amazon store if you just go to handgunworld.com. So I wanted to get the information out there. And all right, here we go. Let's get right to John Hadaway. Well, this week, John Hadaway's back on the show. Welcome back, John.
Hey, it's good to be back, Bob.
Yeah, good to have you back. It's been several weeks. I think the last time was a few weeks before our class in Arkansas last month.
You know, Bob, I think you're right. I mean, I made a couple of back-to-back appearances, I think, and maybe that expired my quota for being on your show for a couple of months.
Yeah, I have very strict quotas on this show.
I can tell. I can tell. When I have to fill out the guest request form, you know, to get on here, I can tell you've definitely raised the notch.
What did you think of those 25 questions on that form?
You know, some of them I felt like were a little bit personal, but I mean, you know, I guess if you want to know what kind of health and beauty aid products I use, I guess we could talk about it.
I was wondering about your skin products. You know, that's what I was wondering about.
Well, you know, I've got a special tactical skin product class that I offer, and people really need training on the, you know, application of sunscreen and other products like that. And, you know, I've actually, Bob, seen a well-known national trainer discuss with two other male students how to properly tan and apply suntan lotion to their arms and different parts of their body to get properly tan while training on the range.
Are you being serious?
It's on YouTube. Go look it up.
Send me a link when we're offline.
No. It's there, and if anybody wants it, they have to find it on their own. But I have seen it with my own two eyes, and it's a very manly video with manly men rubbing lotion on other manly men. Not a bit of tactical training, just simply how to rub suntan lotion on your male students. I won't be teaching that class.
And I won't be participating in that class either.
Thank you, Bob. I mean, I think just by going at this, there's some people right now that are going to need some mental bleach to get that out of their mind.
Oh, jeez. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, so you successfully passed the guest request form. You passed that test, so now you're back on. And why don't we start by doing a debriefing of our Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced class last month? How did you think it went? What do you think the students got out of it?
Well, let me just say this, Bob. I kind of want to start out a little different tack if we can, but
okay.
You know, it's the first time I've had a chance to train with Ben. And, you know, he's a switched-on guy. He's sharp. He's passionate about what he does. And, you know, he takes training really seriously. And, you know, Bob, you and I have worked together before. I think we're kind of a known quantity to each other. But I really, you know, without being a sycophant, I mean, I was like, hey, I learned a bunch of stuff from the guy. And I think the students did, and it was great to work with him and train with him. And I shamelessly stole some of his best material.
Yeah, Ben's he's definitely a switched on guy, and I've had the pleasure now of over 2 years co-instructing with him, and I learn something every time we get together and teach a class. And you know, I steal a few things from him too, but you know, he borrows it from other people as well.
You know, I've often said that what I do best is represent other people's material.
That's a good way to put it. Well, I'm sure that Ben will enjoy that compliment. He's good, and you know, he brings a lot of good military experience, but he also brings a lot of good practical, real-world experience to the class as well.
I think that's very true. I do. I think that's clearly the case, and you know, I've enjoyed working with the guy, and I hope to do it again.
I want to compliment you. I thought your training on taking care of a hostage taker was magnificent. I thought that was very, very good, and it was very well received by the students. You know, I would have to say that that's something that I bet you a lot of people don't practice enough, but could easily find themselves in that situation.
You know, one of the things I think, Bob, and you know, obviously there's some things that we don't mind talking about and some things that we do want to talk about, but I think that the components that were involved in that, people were really not prepared for what was involved, not just with the mechanics of the drill, but just simply in facing what could be one of the worst possible situations that could occur.
Yeah, well, since we're on the subject, what do you think would be the top two, what's the word I'm looking for? What are the top two things people need to really understand and know about having to shoot a hostage taker?
Well, you know, Bob, my experience has been this. When you are dealing with a hostage situation, you know, there's really two levels of it, and I'm going to oversimplify this because I don't think anybody like truly feels this way, but here's the way it is. There is emotionally coupled. In other words, you're emotionally involved with the person who's being taken hostage.
Right.
And that's what I call a non-professional situation, in that you are not professionally detached, if you would. The second thing is, you know, is this. you have the professional situation. So you've got a team of people who've trained together. They have a strategy that they're going to employ to get that hostage back. And to them, you know, they're not, I don't want to say they don't care, but they don't have the same level of emotional baggage that they bring with them. For instance, and I'll give you this one. You know, if you were to think about a family member being taken hostage, what your first instinct would be is, well, if I'm professional, I didn't do anything to cause this. But if you're not professional, how do you not feel riddled with self-doubt in that moment where you have to begin dealing with that situation? Does that make sense in terms of the emotional baggage that you would have?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I think that emotional baggage is something that people need to learn to overcome. And most people probably don't have a whole lot of training in how to overcome that.
And that is one of the things that we try to do in this segment, is to kind of inoculate people at least as much as possible to detach and say, this is what has to be done versus this is how I feel in this moment in time.
And let me tell you something that was going through my mind during that exercise. You know, I could see it very easily happening, and probably a lot of listeners could see this happening. A home invasion, for example. If you've got a child that is sleeping in a different part of the house than the adults sleep in, and somebody busts into your home, they might get to the kids first, and they might be holding one of your children hostage.
Correct.
And so how are you going to deal with that situation? And I thought your training on that was pretty good. So the emotional baggage, what's the other thing people need to realize about that?
Well, I think one of the things you've got to realize is that your plan has to be executed in an environment when things have already gone wrong. You know, this is not the best you're going to do in a hostage-taking situation is get back to zero. There's no winning.
Right.
And, you know, so you've got to really look at it and say, how do I get from bad to zero, rather than how do I potentially avoid this? How do I let the police handle it? You know, all these other things that we teach a private citizen to do really aren't options when someone you love is being held hostage, home invasion, at the mall, at the workplace, whatever those situations, at school, you know, insert any bad situation. You know, you're really fighting from a mental, physical disadvantage because someone else has already taken that initiative away from you.
Yeah.
And so learning how to have a plan, learning how to communicate through that, and learning no matter what happens to stay in the fight, those are lessons that are very difficult to teach apart from how I've kind of developed that little drill that works. And I think, Bob, you'd have to agree that there was no one that came out of that drill the same as they went in.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And not only did they not come out of it the same as they went in, you know, I saw a lot of humbled expressions on people's faces when it was over.
Yeah, it was not your typical post-exercise debrief at the range where, you know, people were looking for a little payback on the target or, you know, they had this issue or that issue. I mean, I think we had a group of committed individuals.
Yeah, we did. Now, the vehicle fighting, I thought, was also very good. You did a great job with that. You know, one thing, I want you to talk a little bit about that, because one thing that I learned is, first of all, airsoft pellets hurt.
Do they, Bob? I didn't notice.
It's the second time I've been hurt by airsoft pellets. The first time was when I took force on force. No, but the thing I learned the most is that you're not as safe in your car as you think.
Well, you know, Bob, I think that everyone experienced some commonality through the drills. The first one is, if you're in your vehicle, you cannot beat the action with your reaction of someone who intends to do you harm without getting you out of that vehicle. Would you agree with that? I mean, that was a lesson learned.
Yes, I would definitely agree with that, and I want to take that one step further. A lot of people talk about using their car as a weapon, using their car as a 2,000-3,000-pound bullet. Well, I would like to urge people to slow down a little bit on that kind of thinking, because one thing that that vehicle fighting drill taught us is a bad guy with a gun, when he gets the drop on you and he fires at you through the windshield, it's too late. It's too late by that time for you to use your car as a weapon, in my opinion.
You know, Bob, I think that, you know, we've talked about this a lot, and I'm going to reiterate something here, and it's sort of like, you know, we're having an inside joke and the listeners are listening to this, but the lesson that I was hoping to teach on that segment of that evolution of training was, is that your car, people have incorrectly correctly reasoned to the wrong conclusion, that I'm safe in here, I have the advantage in here, I can use this thing as a weapon, and in reality, you know, we don't run over people who we think are making a furtive movement and haven't presented a gun or anything. And, you know, if we're stopped, by the time they've shot us and we step on the accelerator, they've already moved to the side and we can't whip that vehicle around. It just can't be done. And I think that was evidenced by the drill, that you're basically in a metal shoot box and you've got a limited amount of movement strapped in there. And I think even the exercises we did, you know, in the classroom, where we put everybody together and, you know, we said, okay, here you are, how are you going to get out, how are you going to do this, showed really quickly that, yeah, people thought they knew one thing, but their plan just fell apart when you put a little pressure on it.
Well, and that's, you know what, you're right, and that's the main benefit of any kind of a training class is, you know, many students I find, they show up at training with a plan. Okay, I'm going to do this this way and this that way, and their plans get really destroyed once the drill starts and they find themselves in situations they didn't expect.
And, you know, I think the second thing here, Bob, out of the vehicle thing was this. How many people had difficulty getting out of the vehicle and bringing the gun to bear on a non-moving target that was standing there waiting to be shot?
It was amazing. I mean, I saw students bumping into the door and banging into the window and the side view mirrors, and it was unbelievable. It was almost everybody had trouble with it.
You know, and we saw people with lots of wasted movement. We saw people try things, figure out they couldn't get a shot from where they thought. You know, I grabbed two people that I know to keep them from eating the gravel because they were tangled up in the door and the seatbelt.
Right.
So, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, we didn't perfect fighting from the vehicle, but we certainly gave people something to practice when they get home, how to get out of their vehicle. You know, just simple things like, gee, before you draw your gun, you begin opening the door and release the seatbelt, because until those two things are done, the gun is not much help if you're going to shoot and get out of the vehicle.
Well, that's right. The other thing I got from the vehicle fighting segment was the distraction techniques. You know, a lot of bad guys are going to use distraction techniques. One guy might be there with a gun, and he's not really the shooter, and he distracts the driver while somebody else nails the driver from the other side.
Whatever would you be talking about, Bob?
Oh, gee, it might have been a certain little drill that we did, right?
Exactly. And how eye-opening do you think that was to Ben and all the students? With a little bit of misdirection, I didn't even attempt to hide. No one saw me walk up and begin shooting our driver, because they were focused on what?
They were focused on Ben and I. I played the bad guy outside the vehicle with a gun, and Ben was the driver. And you're right, a lot of students who were standing there didn't really even pay any attention to you walking up in plain sight.
And you know, Bob, people would say, wait a minute, that wasn't fair. You didn't tell Ben there was going to be two shooters. You didn't tell the class to watch out for you coming around the other side. And I'm like, gee, you mean robbers have to fight fair and they have to give you a scenario briefing before they rob you?
Yeah, the bad guys have to give you a scenario briefing, and then they have to give you a walkthrough and let you air gun it first before the action starts.
And so, you know, that was the lesson on, hey, you know, had Ben gotten out of the vehicle to address you,
right,
I couldn't have shot him.
Well, yeah, because he probably would have been pretty well protected by the vehicle.
He certainly would have been obscured by the vehicle, and I would not have had him pinned down. He would have been mobile. So, you know, there's multiple layers on this vehicle thing, and I think that's one of the places where, you know, as trainers, yeah, we were shooting airsoft, you know, and yeah, it hurts. However, I don't know how to demonstrate those exercises on a vehicle and have anyone volunteer to let me shoot their vehicle up or shoot them up with real guns and let them shoot out of it. You know, it's one thing to let people shoot out of a vehicle, but you know, Bob, one little other thing, how about this? Not one person had a plan to tell the other person in the vehicle what to do if they had to go to a gun, but it sure, you can see the necessity of that once you start talking about squeezing a gun off in a confined space. You need to have a plan for everyone else in the vehicle what they're going to do when you whip that blaster out.
Exactly. And, you know, again, people need to realize not only do you have to have a plan, but as you mentioned earlier, the bad guys are not going to fight fair. Oftentimes there's going to be more than one of them. You know, that's what's kind of frustrating when I see people plinking away at single targets and calling that training. It just doesn't necessarily happen that way most of the time in the real world.
You know, Bob, I look at it this way. You know, this class was just what it said. You've got a concealed carry permit. Hey, you've gotten probably somewhat of the obvious training that needs to occur. We all are real good at reading books, magazines, internet articles, watching YouTube. And so because we're really good at that, we go, well, I must be good at that technique and I must have it all thought out. And you put a little pressure on, and that's the only way I know to determine if what I'm going to do has even a remote chance of getting me out of this situation when it all goes bad.
Yep, that's right. And I want listeners also to understand that airsoft guns, paintball masks, and plenty of good padding, they really have a good place in your training regimen.
And, you know, that's one of the things where I want to say, too, is, you know, we had a safety briefing. We had staff there that were geared strictly to, you know, make sure that we kept everybody safe. So, and we didn't let it turn into airsoft faggotry where we were all just shooting over our shoulder and slinging BBs. Now, Chaz did get shot a couple of times, I think. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know. Something happened there. I'm not sure what. So, you know, I think that was good, good training for everyone. And I think it was one of the things that added to what you need to know once you've got a concealed carry permit.
Right. I agree. So a lot of people by this point, since they've been hearing us talk about it, are probably wondering when we're going to do the next one. And it looks like we're going to do a version two of that class end of March 2015.
That is correct. And, you know, there's going to be a couple of changes, Bob, that we've talked about. You want to go into those?
Yeah, we're going to add some night fighting to it, aren't we?
Exactly. You know, it's a stark thing, but, you know, every day that big ball of fire goes down and it gets to be low light. Well, you know, a lot of people don't have the opportunity to train in a low light or no light situation. And so what we're going to add to this class is this is going to be a bring your flashlight. We're going to discuss flashlight techniques, how to carry them, how they work. And we are not going to go, oh, by God, I got a weapon-mounted light. Well, congratulations. Does that mean, you know, most people won't even carry a pocket flashlight, much less that extra weight of the weapon-mounted light? But I'm sure I'm going to hear somebody who says, I got a weapon-mounted light. Well, great. You still got to be able to search and see what you need to see without pointing your gun at it, because just because it's dark doesn't mean you get to point your gun at it, because your Glock is not a holder for your flashlight.
That's right.
So we're going to teach flashlight techniques. We're going to teach shooting in the dark. We're going to teach target acquisition in the dark. We're going to basically give these people the 101 on night fighting. Now, you know, this class that we're talking about, you know, typically is a few hundred bucks by itself. Just by itself, this class is usually a couple hundred bucks. We're going to add that in. We're also going to add in, you know, we talked a little bit, and some of the feedback we got was, hey, you know, there was a good segment on the you know, chemicals and devices and other stuff to clean your guns. And then we're going to divide the students based on type of gun together. And we're going to put, you know, all the Glock guys together, the 1911 guys together. And we're going to do a detail, you know, strip down, show them how to take their guns apart, put them back together. So that way every family of gun basically knows how to clean them, put them back together, and how to strip them down to their components as far as they need to.
Yeah, yeah, good idea. And I want people to know this is just in the preliminary planning stages right now. The date's not set in stone, but we're looking at the last weekend in March. And we might do some tweaking. It's a long ways away, but I just wanted to plant that seed for people that might already be starting to look at their training regimens for 2015.
And you know, Bob, I think, you know, I'll say this. This is the first time I've seen you and Ben teach your class, which we did really pretty much on the first day for the most part. And, you know, Bob, I got to say, it was good. I think we heard a lot of good praise coming back for, you know, busting off the X and shooting targets on the move, things like that that you don't get to do when you go to a range and rent a stall. You know, you don't. They don't appreciate you running up and down behind the stall, shooting at your target, or going down, running down range. So I think people got a lot of valuable skills out of that segment, out of being able, you know, to move and to shoot. And we shot a variety of different kinds of targets and styles of targets and things. So I think, you know, from what I got, I was really impressed with all that. And thought, hey, this is good, solid stuff you guys are teaching. That again. A lot of people with a concealed carry permit just don't get to practice or work on or be trained on their own.
Yeah, and you know what somebody else told me? They told it to me privately. It was after we got done doing the student debrief. They also liked the, and you kind of brought it up, shooting at different types of targets and different colors of targets. I don't know if people have ever thought about this before listening to this show, but you know, you need to practice shooting different colors of targets. So many of us get used to shooting those light brown cardboard IDPA targets or whatever it is that the range has that they happen to be renting that day. But, you know, your bad guy could be wearing any different color of clothing, and you need to be, you know, practicing shooting those different colors. It does make a difference.
And, you know, that's one of the things at night that becomes exponentially more difficult.
Absolutely.
Is target identification.
Absolutely. And so, and colors make a big difference when you're identifying a target at night as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely do. So we're going to, you know, we're going to add a bunch of that in. And I think, you know, I think that what we've really done here is, you know, we had a, you know, kind of an exploratory class, if you would. I don't think anybody felt like a guinea pig. I think everyone I heard said, hey, it was great. We got our money's worth. You know, we learned a lot. But I think we've really going to hone this thing in and put it into the two-day format, but we're really going to ramp it up a notch, and we're going to focus in on the things that people need those skills for, you know, really personal protection, protecting your family. And if you're out at night, out during the day, you know, all the scenarios that can come up, it's like we're going to give you the tools. You may need all of them. You may need some of them. You may need one of them. But you got to have them before you can use them.
Yeah, that's true. Let me say something about night fighting. Tell me if you found this to be true, John, because Ben and I have taught a few night fighting courses in San Antonio. The color black is not that difficult to see at night, contrary to popular belief.
You know, Bob, here's the thing that happens, though. Colors begin to blend together, and black is not your problematic color, but it's when you have, you know, you think your bad guy's wearing a white shirt, but it's a gray shirt.
Right.
And, or is it a red shirt? Because red loses a lot at night, too.
Oh, it loses a whole lot. Red and green lose a lot at night.
Exactly. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of things that we're going to do with color identification that are going to make it really, you're going to have to know how to use that flashlight and realize, you know, I just can't blast away because I think. I got to blast away because I know.
Right. And even in the daytime, colors matter because, you know, I mean, think about your front sight. Do you have a white front sight or a red one or a green one or a black one? And they're going to present themselves differently with a different color background.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of my favorite things, Bob, and I go into this all the time, is people go, well, you know, I've got tritium night sights, so I'm going to be perfect. And I'm like, ever drop that gun in the mud? Well, you could, couldn't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
What if your sight's covered up? How about a flashlight technique that works with your sights not working? Or, gee, those tritium night sights, they're not guaranteed forever. They're guaranteed for a number of years. What if the day you decide to pull it out is the day they stop working where you can tell what they are?
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of things that we have to have some basic skills at target identification, running the gun, and knowing how to manipulate a flashlight, which adds a whole lot of difficulty to basic shooting skills.
You know, something else that some people don't think about is sometimes those tritium vials pop out of the sights. That's happened to me before.
Well, they break too, Bob.
They break. They break, or the tritium vial pops out, and what are you going to do? What are you going to do at night if all of a sudden your front tritium sight's not working? You know, do you have a plan for that?
You know, Bob, that's... I guess what I'm going with this is most night shooting, and this is what's going to kill people, most night shooting involves shooting one-handed.
Almost, you know? All of it is, yeah.
Yeah, so you're going to have to figure out, hey, what am I going to do here when I only got one hand on the gun, I got a target over here, you know, I need to scan and assess, I need to, you know, there's just so many other things going on. I think it's just a critical part if you're going to carry a gun is to know how to operate at night.
Exactly. Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's going to be good stuff in that class coming up. And, you know, we kind of gave some people a few pearls of wisdom here. So that's enough on the debriefing of the class and what's to come. I understand you have a few other topics you wanted to talk about.
Well, you know, Bob, I'll share a couple of things with you. You know, one of the things that I feel really strongly about is this. You know, and this kind of comes out of the hostage rescue thing of being emotionally involved with someone, is this. And here's what I find. Those of us who carry a gun for personal protection, even if we're professionals and we do it for a living, we still have moments where we're out as, you know, a citizen. We have our spouse with us. We have our children with us. We have our dog with us, whatever that is. And something bad happens. And, you know, I find this moment of this, and I say, what are you going to do? And I go, blah, 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 blah. Well, I am going to insert answer. And I'm going to go, what's your wife and kids going to do? And there's this pause. And I go, I'm waiting. Well, they would do, and then they construct this plan in their head. Okay. And how do they know to do that? And there's this pause. Are they going to read your mind? At the end, a pause. Have you told them anything? Well, okay. Your wife gets on the phone to the police because she doesn't have a gun. What does she need to tell the police?
That's right.
So you don't get shot when they show up. Because they know she's the one calling. They're looking for a female. But what does she need to tell them so they know you're the good guy if you're standing over a bloody corpse with your gun barrel smoking, you know? Well, she would, really? How do you know that? You know, so what I've really got is this. We have, on September 19th through the 21st, tactical strategies for couples intensive weekend. Myself and Kathy Jackson will be teaching this class. Now, Bob, a lot of people, I can hear them right now going, well, my wife's not a gun person. Or, and I have this happen, my husband, he's not really a gun person. I have people that say that. Bob, I really do.
I'm sure.
Or, you know, I'm the gun person in the family. They sort of got a gun, and they sort of might have something with them, but I'm going to be the one that's going to go to gun. Okay, great. So what we're going to do, and if I really broke this down into an elevator speech, it goes like this. The first thing we're going to do is, this is like Sandals Resort, but with tactical strategies, meaning this. It's one price, and I'm going to tell you right now, for the 2.5 days, is $1,400. But, here's the but. Your hotel is covered. Your meals are covered. All you have to do is get here and bring guns and ammunition with you. Now, what you're going to do is we're going to have every meal planned with an object lesson, teaching session, and then we're going to give you time every evening to go back to your hotel room without kids, without laundry to do, without anything else, with a worksheet. And you two are going to sit down and talk about and process the information, the tactics, the strategies, and the skills that have been given to you, and you're going to develop some plans of how you will work as a couple given different scenarios. Now, it may be that, Bob, there's people that kids are grown, and I go, do you ever have any grandkids with you? Might need to talk about that. Or, my kids are grown, we don't have grandkids. Do you have any hairy kids that are around, you know, the dogs? What are we going to do there? You know, how are we going to get back in the vehicle? Who's going to call? Where are we going to position ourselves? If we scatter, where do we rendezvous back at? You know, how do we communicate with each other? What are the words that we use to let the other person know, you know, this is the life and death situation going on here, so that we don't have to, and also, honey, I will never do that to you unless it really is. Not, I will do that to watch you hit the ground, you know, but it, this is it. This is the real deal.
Yeah.
And so the idea here, Bob, is that not just this is training, but honestly, this is sort of couples time, too, to really spend that time once. You know, it's like they say, go to financial planner, get your house in order, invest in it one time, do an annual checkup. Well, this is sort of the tactical strategy for couple one-time planning. Yeah, you're going to need some checkups as your life changes, you move, your family situation adjusts, but you need to have a plan as a couple. Now, here's the deal. We're going to go through this, and then the final graduation exercise is going to be that we're going to take your written plan, and we're going to run you through that written plan with role players and simunition to see how it holds up.
That's cool.
And so what that means is that you're going to get to watch other people's plans unfold, and they're going to get to watch yours unfold. Now, Bob, that doesn't mean that you're not going to go back home and adjust your plans. I want you to. But what it's going to mean is that at least you'll have a construct as a couple, one, to know safely how to talk about bad things. Two, to know that both of you have had a common experience so that you just don't start spouting off, honey, this is what's going to happen. You're going to do this, 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 and this. I'm going to be doing this, this, this. She's thinking to herself, why? I read it in American Handgunner. Masada, you put it in his column. Right here is what you're going to do. And by God, honey, you're going to do it. Nope. She's been to the, even if she's not shooting, she's going to go to the training with you and see the reality of what the gun can and cannot do.
Exactly.
She's going to see how this strategy plays itself out, why she needs to retreat this way and gather the chicks around her and have a plan to egress and stay away from the car. You know, here's your mission, not here's your instinct. And drop everything you got, grab a hold of the pocket hangers you got with you, and run like the wind. And I'm going to deal with this, but get on the phone to 911. You know, maybe that's the plan. Maybe the plan is she's going to come up and go to guns, and you're going to call 911 and grab the kids because she's the gun person. You know, maybe both of you are there with guns. Well, guess what? You need to know how to rain fire down on the same target without getting into a crossfire or potentially injuring someone else. You know, again, hostage situations. How are we going to handle it? What are we going to do? You know, we have to agree that this is what's going to happen, and each of us are going to play our roles out and trust one another. So this is not really like a trust fall for couples, but it is an education time that will bring you together to let you talk about things that you hope never happen. But if, you know, it's like saying, honey, I don't want us to have a house fire. But, you know, here's where we're going to rendezvous, check for the kids, and, yeah, we got fire extinguishers. Doesn't mean you're a pyromaniac. It means you want your family to survive.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, this sounds like an excellent class. It sounds like more of a planning class than a shooting class.
You know, Bob, it's really going to be both because we're going to test those plans with guns and ammunition and stuff. But I got to tell you something. One other thing to keep in mind, this class has a very limited enrollment to it. And the reason I say this is I want people to understand this is not going to be a cast of thousands. You're going to be in there with some other couples. You're going to meet them. You're going to know them. But, you know, you can't run 50 people through this. And we're going to have multiple instructors, multiple scenarios, multiple classrooms, you know, everything we do. Like, for instance, every dinner session, we're going to send out wardrobe attire that we want people to bring with them because we're going to have a nice sit-down dinner somewhere. Well, we want to talk about how do you carry your gun? How do you access it? Guess what? What if you go, well, I have this little black, and Bob, I know this happens to you all the time. I have this little black party dress on. How do I tote my blaster with this thing? I mean, Bob, that happens to you all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it happens to me at least once a week.
And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about maybe there may be a situation where, say it like this, Bob. You know, let's say we go somewhere and business function, whatever, maybe you can't carry a gun on you. But how do you off-body carry and work with your spouse so that you don't leave that gun unattended? You know, there's lots of scenarios where we're going to really talk about working together, even if there's only one gun in between you. How do you work together to make that happen? How do we get your spouse, male or female, to be comfortable to pick up that bag, that briefcase, that whatever that has a gun in it, and know, Bob, you're going to go up front and address the people at this business meeting, and maybe you guys have been at the beach all day, and what you've got on is, you know, swim shorts, a Hawaiian shirt, and flip-flops, and she's going to hold on to the beach bag for you because it's got your gun in it. You know, you can't leave that thing sitting back there. You got to hold on to it. And maybe we're going to make a plan at the beach that this is how we're going to – you know what I'm saying, Bob? There's just a lot of situations that we may not cover everyone in class, but we're going to give these couples enough time to say, what about this? What about this? What about this? We don't want it where they can't ask and have their questions answered and dealt with and give them a plan. And then we're going to go back and say, write it out, talk about what it is. And I want to make sure that – you know, it's very much built around putting everyone in situations that they can have some practical exercises, just like vehicles. We're going to do a segment on hotels. We're going to do a segment on homes. You know, we're going to do just a lot of segments about travel, being out in public, you know, getting in and out of cars, just all those basic things that we all got to agree that two people working together beat one person working in the dark.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds really awesome. I think it's great. And people can sign up at NighthawkCustomTraining.com, go to the classes page, and I can see it right there. John, you know what? Nearly everybody listening to this show, they know who you are. They know who I am. They may not know who Kathy Jackson is. Why don't you explain to them who she is?
Kathy Jackson has written a book called Cornered Cat. And Kathy has basically made her career, her bones in the firearms industry and the training industry as a writer and a trainer. She's written for numerous publications, and she has her own blog, her own webpage. And, you know, she trains women-only classes. What her claim to fame really is of late as a trainer. And Kathy's come in a couple of times and taught ladies-only classes. And I said, you know, Kathy, you're given half, and as a rule, I'm giving the other half to the men. How do we put this together, you know? And we spent a lot of time, really, she was here for almost a week. We spent a lot of time really drafting the outline of this class, drafting the subject matter, really talking about how we make it. You know, it's easy to get a guy to go to a gun class. Guns, shooting, you know,
right.
Hoorah, all that stuff. Women, they go. They don't want to be around their husbands when they go shoot. But it's like, hey, this is not going to be your typical shooting class. This is going to be strategies. How do we get strategies out there, couple them with practical exercises, and then test those things to make sure that we're sending you home with an individual plan for your family, your environment you live in, and the dangers you face?
Yeah, and what's the date of the class again?
We have that September 19th, 20th, and 21st. And the plan is we're going to ask everybody to come in. It'll start about 5 or 6 o'clock on Friday night. And what we'll do is basically wrangle everybody up at the hotel. We're going to take you somewhere to eat. We'll tell you how we want you to dress for that. You know, we're going to open it up with a bunch of topics to get through the weekend on. And then we're going to send you back with some working material. We'll get up the next morning. We'll have a group breakfast. You know, we'll do some exercises at breakfast. We'll throw you in cars. We're going to take you to some other places. You know, this is going to be geared towards, you know, a whole bunch of activities that – really bring that team environment together for couples.
Yeah. And, you know, when you first started talking about this class, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes ago, you know, you brought up something that I want to reiterate, and that is even if your spouse or significant other, whether that's your wife or your husband, even if they're not carrying a gun, they need to have a plan of action when that stink hits the fan, when it goes down, when it's game time. They need to have a plan. They need to know what to do, and don't just assume that they know what to do.
Well, and Bob, you know what? I think the best thing to do is to demonstrate, you know, if I'm a non-shooting spouse, if my wife is the one that's going to go to the gun, you know, it's one thing to tell me, okay? It's another thing to show me. It's something different to let me participate in that because now I own it and I'm not afraid of it and I know what to expect and I know what I need to do. But if you just tell me, I may rebel against that. If you show me, I may feel, you know, that you condescended to me because I'm not a gun person. But once I begin to feel how vital it is for my participation in that plan to keep my family safe, that I realize even without a gun, I'm an equal stakeholder here.
Right.
Then I stop being another bystanding victim and begin to be able to protect myself and my family.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
You know, Bob, I want to make one other point because I'm not apologizing, but I want to break this down for everybody.
Yeah.
Look, it's $1,400, but I want to tell you something. By the time we have paid for your hotel, we have paid for, you know, a whole bunch of meals, and we're not going to slack on you on that. We're not throwing you to McDonald's. I mean, we're going to feed you well. We've got simunition involved, you know, which you understand those things are not, you know, they're not freebies. You know, you got to have lots of equipment and stuff. Realistically, Bob, what you're talking about is, you know, really less than it's pretty much a 2.5 day class for about $400 a person.
Yeah, when you figure in everything that you're paying for, that's correct.
And Bob, I'm going to tell you something. I have local people who have said, "Well, we're local. Can we come and just not stay in the hotel?" And I'm like, "No. Why? Because we are going to put everybody on the same floor of the hotel. We are going to basically use a floor of the hotel to teach some stuff, and we want everyone to, you know, be able to bond. But here's the thing. If I go home and I've got 900 cable channels, the fastest internet in the whole world, a safe full of guns, American Handgunner magazine for 5 years waiting for me to be read, you know, I'm not going to talk to my wife. I'm going to do everything else." Well, the bargain has to be that we have to communicate. So we're going to basically, we're pulling the internet out, the telephone lines out, and we're removing the cable. You must talk to your spouse. That's a joke. We're not doing all those things. But we want to remove every distraction from this class. We are looking for a 24-hour-a-day immersion experience with the couples. Now, with that said, yes, we'll get you a twin bed if that's what you, or two queens if that's what you want. But, you know, I mean, I just want everybody to understand the meals are important to allow that to be part of the experience of a couple. You know, the spending the time and talking together. So we're trying to make it so it's facilitating that time together. And we're removing as many distractions as possible. So somebody will go, "Can I stay at the Marriott? I have Marriott points. Can I stay at the..." No, I'm sorry. Everybody gets a room. Yes, we're going to do bed checks to make sure everyone's in bed. You know, I mean, we're really serious that and Kathy and I talked about this, and she feels it's very important to remove all the distractions from a couple really discussing these important issues. Because if not, you know what will happen? Tomorrow morning, somebody will show up, and you'll ask them, and the couples will be looking at each other, and then they'll do what I call a polite talk. "Yeah, we talked about that. And yeah, honey, remember we, you know," and it's like, they're trying to come up with a plan. No, they didn't talk about it. They went home. She did the laundry, and he cleaned the guns. You know, right. And then the dog threw up on the carpet after it ate the bag of M&Ms, and the kids are upset because they don't. You know what I'm saying? It's like, we want to make it. This is the one time. Invest in your future as a couple, and invest in these strategies for an intensive weekend, and then you got it the rest of your life.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I mean, that's, you know, this is a unique class. There's not a lot of classes like this being offered. So I want to urge people, couples, to get signed up for this.
And so I'm excited about it, Bob. I've got a couple other classes. Can I shamelessly plug them?
Shamelessly plug them. And then I have a topic that I'd like you to address. Actually, a couple of them. But go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Next class that I have, which this class will be August 30th, and this is actually going to be kind of a different deal, but this is going to be at Thunderbird Tactical. And what we're going to do here is it's called 1911 Critical Skills. Now, Bob, it's a one-day class, and it's for Nighthawk 1911s. And what we're doing is asking people who own a Nighthawk and really want to learn to run the platform to come in. But we have 7 slots available for people who don't own a Nighthawk. We will provide you with a Nighthawk, magazines, holsters, mag pouches, everything you need. All you do is got to provide, you know, good quality ammunition for the gun. And we'll even have that available to buy if you want to. But no extra charge, put you in the guns. And what we're going to do is teach you to fight with the 1911 the way that it was meant to be fought with. We're going to break down the history of the gun. We're going to talk about why it operates the way it operates. We're going to talk about how to run the gun, how to deploy the gun, how to carry the gun concealed comfortably all day long, what choices are necessary. We're going to talk about where the advantage of that gun really comes in and how you make that great trigger work for you, how you make those manual safeties work, how malfunction drills work. We're going to talk about deep cleaning the gun, take it all the way down to the components, put it all the way back together again. You know, this is geared towards learning the 1911 platform. This is not, you know, Bob, let me be clear. I don't own Ray-Bans. I don't own a thigh holster. I'm not going to the desert. You know, I mean, this is not an operator contractor class. This is someone who wants to learn to fight with a 1911 platform and has a good basic understanding of guns. But yet, really, it's like, man, there's a lot of switches and buttons, and that gun's made out of metal, and it's heavy, and, you know, it's got a little bitty magazine compared to this big thing, and why would anybody want? Well, guess what? You know, this class is $175. You get me and Shaw out there, and I really am going to show you how to run the platform. And I think it'll be a great opportunity for people to experience what a good 1911 is, how reliable they really are, and what a good fighting tool they are. Now, not to sell you a gun. I'm not going to pitch you on buying something. It's just a class to get that under your belt, because a lot of people will say, well, I've been told that 1911s aren't fighting handguns. Okay, let's see. This is a great opportunity to find out for yourself. And for 7 of you, you're going to get to shoot a really great handgun and decide, is that really worth that much money? Is it that much better than my Kimber or Warrior Max 47D with snake claws and double fang imprints and specially painted finish? Well, let's find out. You know, let's run it. You tell me. So, you know, this is kind of, I've always put it out there is, you know, let's put up or shut up. And people talk about the 1911. Hey, come to class and see. You know, if it's dogs and they don't run and you can't be taught to run it and everybody flubs it up, it'll be pretty obvious. Or, hey, this is really what John says it is. This is a great way to find out. So, doing that on August 30th, which is a Saturday, all-day class at Thunderbird Tactical. You can go to Thunderbird. It's actually thunderbirdguns.com. Look on the calendar there, August 30th. It's got a little place where you can sign up. And really, 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 I think it's going to be a cool class. It's going to be a fun class. It's going to be a limited-size class again. So we're not going to have a cast of thousands. It's going to be lots of personal attention from John and Shaw of the Gunfighter Podcast and the crew from Thunderbird Tactical.
Yeah, that's cool. That's in Wichita, right?
That's correct. That's correct.
Wichita, Kansas.
Yeah, and then, Bob, I've got a class that I'm really excited to tell you about. I'm finally having Daniel Shaw come down for Handgun Vitals 1 and 2, November 1st and 2nd. Now, this class is $350. It's 2 days of Shaw running a handgun and me dogging him out, saying horrible things to him, and see if I can, you know, mess up his feng shui for him. So it should be a class to remember.
You tried to mess up my feng shui, but it didn't work.
Bob, what did I do to you?
You threw the book at me. You pulled out everything, John.
Bob, what are you talking about? I was a perfect host.
Believe me, I flubbed some stuff up on my own without your help. That was easy for me to do. But no, that sounds, the Handgun Vitals sounds like a great class, too. And that's going to be taking place at Nighthawk Custom Training Academy.
Yep. And then I have one other class I just want to tell everybody about. You know, on July 18th and 20th, which is not this weekend but next weekend, I have a 3-day rifle course, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Now, this is for someone who wants to learn to use and run the carbine, this is the class. We start out saying, this is an AR-15 platform. Here it is. This is how the gun operates. This is how you mount the gun. This is how you shoot a rifle. We work that up till we've got you transitioning between rifle and handgun, doing drills with it. You know, we may do some bounding overwatch stuff with the rifle. But the idea is you come in willing to learn, and 3 days later you go out feeling like I am accomplished on this carbine and I know how to safely employ it. You know, this is the class for you. And, you know, for 3 days, $350. Now, as a side benefit, if you're a law enforcement officer in the state of Arkansas, and it may qualify in other states, this qualifies you to carry a carbine while you're working as a law enforcement officer or a security guard, and it qualifies for some other stuff. Our instructors are myself and Scott Lewis, and, you know, we've got a pretty extensive resume. So anybody's looking for this, you know, and it's not, I wouldn't call it, it's just not like your NRA introductory of this is a gun, this is a bullet. No, no, no. This is how, what's intrinsic to this platform, how do you shoot a rifle, basic marksmanship, move off that quick and get into running the thing, you know. And I think it's going to be a great class. We've already got several students signed up, and I'm looking really forward to it. It's one I've been wanting to do for a few years and just hadn't been able to get it on the calendar and make it work. But I think this is going to be a good class.
Good stuff. All can be found at Nighthawk Custom Training except for the Thunderbird Tactical, and that can be found at thunderbirdguns.com.
Correct.
You know what, John? Not only is this the golden age of guns, but it's also the golden age of training.
I think so. I think so.
I think it is. I mean, there's so many people out there with lots of expertise. Well, good. Good job on summarizing your classes. Now, I got a couple of topics I'd like you to address.
Let's hear them, Bob.
Okay. First of all, I saw something when I was up there with Ben and you, and we were teaching last month. I saw something on your hip that was very confusing, John. It looked like a black plastic gun made in Austria. What the heck was that?
Are you sure, Bob? Because someone must have punked me.
No, I thought it looked like a certain black plastic gun made in Austria. And sure enough, I know what I was seeing. I saw it in your holster on your right hip. What happened there?
You know, Bob, I have said something. There's a famous movie out there, and I'm going to butcher the name of it, but I think it's called Quickly Down Under with Tom Selleck.
I saw that movie.
Okay. And, you know, he's famous because he runs that Sharps rifle, right?
Yeah.
And there was this moment where the evil British landlord, you know, basically challenges him to a pistol draw, and he shoots the guy, and he walks up and he says, I didn't say I couldn't run a pistol. I'm paraphrasing now. I said I don't like them. Well, you know, Bob, here's the thing. I have said for a long time, I don't like a Glock because Glocks don't like me. And now people are like, what do you mean? Like, they chew my hand up. Well, I've always said, too, that my favorite Glock was the 21. I like the caliber. I like the size of the gun. But it just eats my hand up. Well, the new Gen 4s have the removable back straps, and it's got a little bit enough of a beaver tail that it keeps my hand out of the slide. And, you know, I don't mind shooting the thing. Well, you know, I work part-time for a law enforcement agency in this area who I'd rather not name publicly just because I don't want to shame them, not because I'm ashamed of them. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
right.
I'm not embarrassed to them, but I don't want them to be embarrassed to me. That's why I don't have one of those little fish on the back of my car, you know? it's like, I'm not ashamed of my faith. I just don't want my faith to be shamed by me.
very well put.
Yeah. So anyway, where I'm going with this is, it is the issue gun. Is a Glock 21. And so when I'm working for them, I have to carry that particular gun. They say, this is the gun we're going to give you. This is the gun we want you to carry. And also when I'm training, that is the gun that I have to train them with. So it would be pretty disingenuous for me to show up with one gun and say, watch how I shoot this, and make them shoot it with a different gun, you know?
No, I know. And I was just razzing you. So how do you like that Glock 21?
you know, Bob, I'll tell you this, and people are going to throw rocks at me, but it's not as reliable as I'd like. It has issues. That gun, you know, can be as finicky as any other gun. Now, Bob, I'm going to go back to something I said an awful lot, and this is why I'm sort of saying it this way to be delicate, but, you know, there are people in this world I know shoot a bunch, and I respect their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But when someone tells me how reliable their Glock is, and I go, you know, I wonder how many rounds he shoots out of it a year. You know, 100, maybe less. Well, you know, when I'm shooting a few thousand rounds out of my Glock, I can tell you that the gun is not perfect. It's not 100% reliable. I've actually had to clear malfunctions out of the gun. And so from my standpoint, that's a box stock gun, done nothing to it. But I'm almost to the point that I'm going to send it back to Glock because it's not what I consider to be a 100% duty gun should be. And I'm relatively sure, Bob, I know how to run the damn thing.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I've had my Glock 19's jam. I've had my Glock 26 jam, my Glock 17, everything. If you shoot it enough, if you shoot a gun, any gun, pick a gun, I don't care what it is. If you shoot it enough and you train enough with it, it's, you're going to have malfunctions. There is no such thing as a gun that never malfunctions. I have a little saying that if your gun has never malfunctioned, you haven't shot it enough.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting some failures to feed out of it. It's what's concerning with me.
Really?
I'm shooting duty ammunition, you know, so it's not like, well, hey, you need to tighten up a crimp on them reloads. No, I'm shooting duty ammunition.
You're shooting factory ammo. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm having some issues. And that, you know, you asked me about it. I'm not bagging it. I'm just saying, gee, that's my experience. Now, one guy, one Glock Gen 4, you know, an LE gun, three magazines, night sights, and I put the back strap on it with the little, you know, beaver tail on it, thin one. So guess what, though? You know, I've heard they've had some issues out of Gen 4 Glocks.
Well, my Gen 4 Glocks have been pretty good. Not perfect, but they've been pretty good. I would have to say probably not as reliable as the Gen 3s, but then again, I do, well, you know, I think they've got the Gen 4 Glock squared away now in terms of being as reliable as the Gen 3s. If you've got issues with yours, yeah, definitely get with Glock on that.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually probably going to a Glock armorer's class shortly, and I plan on bringing this as the poster child.
Okay.
Want to go to the armorer's class.
I'd be interested to hear the feedback on that.
I'm sorry, Bob, what'd you say?
I said I'd be interested to hear the feedback on that.
Yeah, if I get you, I'm going to bring it. But that's my observation about the Glock. So, you know, but I'll tell you, Bob, it's not a difficult gun to shoot. It's not a difficult gun to carry. It's not a difficult gun to reload. I mean, you know, it's Glock.
Okay, good. Thanks for that. One more thing I want to ask you. You've addressed this on my podcast before, and you were recently on, I think it was Chaz's Road Gunner podcast, talking about this. And I kind of did a mild attempt at addressing this subject last week, actually. Or no, it was actually the week before last. But you're famous for saying probable versus possible, that people should understand what's probably going to happen and what they should prepare for in terms of their self-defense with a gun and what's possible. And you do a pretty good job of that. So would you address that for about 5 or 10 minutes?
Absolutely. You know, Bob, let's just start off with what those two words mean, okay? If I said to you, Bob, is it possible that tomorrow roving hordes and bands of desperados will confront you, you know, at your front door. Well, that is possible for that to happen. I could give you a construct which would involve various, you know, chains of events coming together, and that could possibly happen. Now, Bob, if you live in, okay, let's go differently. You know, Bob, if you spend a lot of time in certain neighborhoods in the DFW area, you are probably going to be a victim of a crime.
Sure.
Well, there, why? Well, one, we know that's where crime is high, okay? Two, we know that people who don't fit this demographic typically are here for these reasons, and so they make really good victims. So the odds of probability say that one of those, the longer I invest my time in this area, the higher the odds of me being a victim of crime. Now, the other one, is it possible it could happen? Yes, but we have no current examples of this happening on a reoccurring basis that make it predictable, that make it over time a certainty, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me give you an example. I would say, now give me, let's talk about something that's really, really high. Nothing in this world is 100%. But let's talk about things that are in the 90% zone. So when I say it's going to happen, I'm saying 90%. Can we agree on that as the threshold?
Sure.
Bob, your power will go out at your house in the next 12 months for at least a few hours, but could be a few days.
Yeah, that's probably, that's nearly 100% certainty.
No, no, all we're doing is 90%. 90% is pretty high in this world.
Yeah, it is 90%, sure.
So you're going to be without power, okay?
Right.
Bob, your internet is going to go down in the next year.
Yep.
Okay. Bob, you will probably lose all cell phone service at some point in the next year.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't say why. I just said you would. Now, what I'm getting at here is, you know, we should plan for probable. Well, what do I mean? Well, if our power goes out for a couple of days and everything in the refrigerator spoils and, you know, I can't just go stay in a hotel and order room service. I got to take care of my animals. I got to take care of this. Well, gee, we need some food that we can make it on for 2 or 3 days. And guess what? Those pumps that pump it into the water, you know, up into the towers. Well, we got a couple of days of water, and then that stops without power to run the pumps. And, yeah, they got generators, but that runs out of diesel. You know where I'm going with this is look, so if we said, gee, Bob, do y'all ever get tornadoes in Texas? I mean, I know you probably heard of those, right?
Yeah, I have heard of those, yes.
So maybe we need to plan for a tornado knocking out a little bit of infrastructure and maybe need to plan on 2 weeks. You know, that's pretty probable, isn't it?
Yes.
Because we have examples of that happening, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Houston, do they ever get hit with a hurricane?
Yes, they do.
Okay, so maybe they're going to be without power for, I don't know, a week or two, you know? What I'm saying to you is, you know, Bob, if we plan for the things that we are almost assured will eventually happen in the short term, 3 to 5 years, if we're planning for those things and they don't happen, we won't be disappointed, will we?
No.
If we do plan for them and they do happen, we'll probably be pretty glad we got a plan, right?
Yeah, that's, I mean, you got to have a plan. That's
okay. But if we plan for the total collapse of our financial system, coupled with all infrastructure collapse, coupled with an EMP pulse because the Cubans suddenly decide to team up with the North Koreans, and we have a pandemic all in the same week, well, those odds get pretty far-fetched real quick. Now, they make a great plot for a book, a great plot for a movie. They make great fodder on the internet. And used to, you know, before we had the internet, you know, we used to have to get these conspiracy theories from shortwave. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I'm being serious. I mean, before the internet, everyone listened to shortwave. Me too. I loved it, you know?
True. That's true.
But what I'm saying is, you know, look, you don't have to own a tinfoil hat to say, let's work out the probable, but maybe some of that possible, let's cut off, say, 90% of the possible. And if you worry about 10%, the closest 10% of the possible that become probable, if you can do that, but here's my problem, Bob, and again, you've asked me to discuss it, here's my problem. You know, it's like I can get people to prepare for the EMP pulse coupled with the complete financial meltdown coupled with the, you know what I'm saying, all of this. I can get people to buy hazmat suits, Geiger counters, you know, space blankets, and 1,000 rounds of ammunition and bury a Connex in their backyard. Okay, I get that. But if you go, hey, how about having a week's worth of canned food and, you know, X amount of water and, oh, I don't know, a few extra gas cans that you rotate out every 3 months by just pouring it in your vehicle and filling it back up the next day, you know, when you go to the gas station kind of thing.
Right.
That's not sexy, Bob. That's not sexy at all. That, oh, that's tedious. And, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, gee, you know, what are you going to do when the power goes off? You going to go hide in your hidey hole and shoot your neighbors? No. You might just need to prolong your standard of living till the power comes back on, because honestly, probable is, I know I'm going to disappoint some people here, but probably the power's coming back on.
Of course.
And probably, even if we have a tornado, they're going to get the power wires back up, because guess what? Every crew in America is heading that way because it's endless overtime. You know, so it's like, I guess I'm just saying, let's just zoom forward 1 second to personal protection, okay?
Yeah, because I wanted you to tie this into, you just did a great job of illustrating the difference. Now tie it into carrying a gun.
Bob, here's where I go. I had this discussion yesterday or the day before, and so it's still fresh in my mind, but I'm going to give it this way. You know, you brought up the whole polymer gun thing and the Wonder Pistols and the 9mm and all this, and I have people who literally say something like this. Well, you know, I carry the Glock blaster with a 33-round magazine in it. That way I'll never have to reload. Statistically, a 33-round magazine, I can shoot down, you know, and they go into this. Okay. But you know what? If I have a choice between a Glock with a 33-round magazine or a single-stack 1911 with an extra magazine on my hip, probably is both guns will eventually jam. But most jams are cured by changing the magazine out.
Right.
So I would rather have someone have a single stack with a separate magazine versus having a double stack with one giant magazine. Now, you're going to go, well, what if I carry an extra magazine from my Glock? Hey, cool. Carry two of them. I'm happy. Everybody's happy. We all win. You know, that's my first example of possible versus probable. We will prepare for the zombie attack. We will not prepare for our gun to malfunction. Well, okay. I know that gun is going to malfunction. I don't know if we're going to have a zombie attack. Secondly, you know, how about this? We know that the sun is going to go down every day. So why don't we have, I don't know, a couple of flashlights on us that work, so that if we have to get out and change a spare tire, we know the people who walk up to help us, we can at least shine the light on them and see what's going on, or while we're waiting for AAA or whatever, or, you know, if we have to hoof it because our cell phone is down, you know, guess what? We can see in the dark. We may not need to shoot the herd of zombies, but a flashlight may come in handy. And people go, what for? Well, you might need to see in the dark.
Yeah, flashlights are great for seeing in the dark. They work so well for that.
That's what I'm saying, though, Bob, is people will have a weapon-mounted light, but they won't carry a flashlight. Well, I've got a flashlight on the gun. Okay, well, tell you what, take it off with your eyes closed, pretend you're in the dark, and don't point it at you or anyone else. Do that for me. Try that with your TLR-1 and see what happens.
Yeah, plus, I mean, let's say they're traveling and they have a flat tire in the dark, and that's the only flashlight they have is a weapon-mounted light. What are they going to do, point their gun at their tire while they're changing it?
Well, you know, a Glock is so boxy, you can turn it upside down, and it'll set up on its sights and just turn the light on, and that's exactly how you're supposed to change a tire. It's in the Glock manual. Seriously, no one reads it. It's in there. How to change a tire with your Glock weapon-mounted light. It's on page 114 of the Glock manual. Check it out.
Oh, okay. I thought the Glock manual was only 113 pages, though.
Maybe. You know, Bob, again, you know, I go back to, well, it's real easy to get people prepared for the zombie apocalypse. But how about this? You know, we're all prepared to make endless headshots on zombies while we chop their heads off. Gee, how about we just know how to present that gun out of the holster really decently? Because we may not be fighting zombies. We may need to access the gun in a hurry because someone is going to hurt us. But we haven't practiced that because we have a 99-cent collapsible pancake holster that we've never drawn out of. And so either A, we can't get the gun out, or B, the holster comes off when we pull the gun. You know, those are the little things where I go, you know, if you paid less than lunch for your holster, you bought the wrong one.
Exactly.
So I'm saying, Bob, you know, it is the things that are dead sexy we get people to do. The things that are not dead sexy that are probably going to be real necessities, it's hard to get people motivated to do that, to spend money on that. Training falls into that category for me. I can get people to sign up. Listen, if I told you I had an aerial operation deal, we were going to fly in helicopters, shoot out of boats, and then we were going on a pleasure cruise across Somalia with a sign that says, hijack me, and then we were going to come out and shoot Somali pirates with 50 caliber machine guns, I could get people to sign up for that class. But to learn to run your gun in the dark, or to learn to run your gun in your vehicle, to learn the basic things that are probably going to need to happen based on statistical probabilities, gee, you know, now I'm down below 90% when I say, guess what? You know, lots of conflicts occur around the car. You may get away with never having one, but odds are, Bob, you're a lot more likely to have what I would consider to be a potentially violent encounter in your car than just about anywhere else unless you're hanging out in some high-risk areas. Because guess what? We all have seen road rage. We have all been flipped off. We have all been cut off in traffic. We have all witnessed the a-hole behind the wheel. Have we not?
Oh, yeah.
That's 90%. Is that not a violent encounter just waiting for some contact?
Yep.
So shouldn't we have a plan for that? Well, that's not sexy. You know, to hear you say, don't be an ass in your car. Don't flip people off. Don't assume, you know, how long in my vehicle presentation did I spend talking about how to be nice in your car, and then I showed them why, and everyone was interested in being nice, don't you think, after that?
Yeah, sure.
You know, I'm just saying, Bob, it's like this. This is my favorite example out of a car and the possible probable to say violent encounter. You know, I don't care what stripe of faith you are. You will see this wherever you go and worship your faith. You will say there will be this, what I call, usually, now not always, but usually there is this at least 4-minute love hug fest that occurs in every worship service where we greet everyone around us, right?
That's right.
How come we all turn nasty when we get in the parking lot and we're trying to leave to go eat?
Isn't that the truth?
But Bob, I'm telling you, that is probable that you are going to have close violent encounters in your car. It is probable. Zombies, possible, but training for that versus training for the other can't get people motivated for. That's where I'm going with wake up, America. Look at the probable and quit telling me about the possible. I had Glenn Tate for a couple of days, and we went at it on the podcast, but we really had some respectful conversations. And, you know, the one thing I said to him, and I actually think he agreed with me, was, you know, before you plan for the next, you know, 5 years, plan for the next 5 days.
That's true.
You know, that's all I'm going with the gun, too. You know, quit planning for the zombie apocalypse and plan for an incident involving your car.
Well, and I'd like to add to that. You know, All you have to do is get on any internet gun forum or even a gun Facebook page and take a look at the amount of interest in the threads about equipment versus the number of the amount of interest in the threads about training. And you'll see 87 responses about the latest doodads and gadgets and equipment and guns, and 4 responses about training. Have you ever noticed that?
You absolutely can get people pumped up for gear. But to go train, oh, no, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, and the thing is if you apply that to probable versus possible, it's possible you might need all the fancy gear that's on your gun and the telekinetic trigger. It's possible you might need that, but it's probably more probable that you're going to need the quality training that the guy across town is putting on next Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You're absolutely correct about that, Bob. And you know, I guess the last thing I'll leave you with here is, you know, maybe we're just interfering with natural selection here. You know, maybe that's the way that, you know, the herd is supposed to be called. I don't know. But where I'm going with this is, you know, the ones who plan for the possible, they're probably going to be disappointed. The ones that plan for the probable, they're probably going to be around for the next evolution of the species.
Yeah, and the ones who don't plan at all are going to be the first ones to go.
Yeah, they're called food.
or fools, one of the two.
Something like that, you know. But that, Bob, I think that's, you know, you asked the question, and I think we've beat it up enough. But, you know, I guess we've come at this from every conceivable method to say, you know, we've talked about excuses of not training. We've talked about, you know, all the myths, all the other stuff. And every time I'm on, we talk about training. I guess we do talk about equipment a little bit from time to time. But, you know, I'll give you this, Bob. This is my closing example about, and I'm really repeating kind of what you said. Nighthawk, if you hadn't caught on, there's some videos I posted, and I've got some teaser pictures up. But we're putting a red dot on a 1911.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. And what we're doing is this. We're taking a Trichicon, I think it's an RMR, and we got a special plate. We got high night sights that, pretty much let us, you know, have a co-witness with the red dot. And, you know, in my opinion, it serves a purpose, and I don't want to be discouraging or anything. But I can get people to foam at the mouth for a piece of gear that costs a lot of money to go on a very expensive handgun. Foam at the mouth. And I think that's great. Yeah, I'll probably have one at some point. I'll probably have one and let you play with it. But guess what, Bob? You know, you get the same guys together and you say, really, you're going to spend, you know, that gun with everything on it is going to be, you know, $4,000. Oh, yeah, I'll do it. Okay, well, why don't you take you and your wife to a $1,400 training class so that you guys can, you know, pretty much work through anything that comes up? Man, you know, it's a lot of money. I don't know if I can. I've got to, you know, and we got to, and someone's got to stay at home and, you know, change the kitty litter box, you know. I mean, it's on and on and on and on. But how long, and all they want to know, how long will it take to get that $4,000 gun with that special, you know, doohickey on there. And I'm not mocking anything we're doing. I'm not doing that at all. I'm simply saying that I see exactly what you're saying, and I see it in huge areas.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I'm like, oh, okay, I guess it's your money, you spend it how you want, but, you know, no matter what happens to that gun, you train, you get to keep that the rest of your life.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, all I can think about is, and let's finish with this. What I can think about is, you remember in the class that we taught about a month ago, you remember Brian with his revolver?
Yes.
Brian was good with his revolver. Brian was out shooting with his revolver a few of, well, probably more than a few of the semi-automatic shooters.
Yep.
But Brian is not out there, you know, trying to, didn't look like he was looking for the latest doodad.
No. Matter of fact, poor old Brian was nothing more than a left-handed shooter running a wheel gun. And, you know, he was just kind of steady Eddie through everything. And I got to tell you, though, you know, it wasn't about equipment. It was about Brian. And I'm like, hey, we all should be dedicated to only own one gun if necessary to be able to shoot that gun well and to invest in ourselves.
Right. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. I got to run, and thanks a bunch for your time.
Bob, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you indulging me and letting me be a commercial for training and kick that around. But I'm looking forward to having you guys back again.
All right. Take care. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Okay, many thanks to John Hottaway for donating his time and once again giving us some good pearls of wisdom about guns and concealed carry and training and all that. So I appreciate that. So if you're interested in his classes, NighthawkCustomTraining.com. That's Nighthawk as in the pistol, NighthawkCustomTraining.com. Since I'm on the subject about classes, don't forget, to all of my California listeners, I'll be going to California October 18th to teach Beyond Concealed Carry. Already got some sign-ups for that. It's begun October 18th, Saturday. Check that out. It's going to be up in Northern California. Ben Branham is teaching in a rifle class. It is going to be AR-specific, but if you want to bring something like an AK or Mini 14 or a pistol caliber carbine, you're fine. That's going to be on October 11th. You can find that at handgunworld.com. We're doing a night class in December, night fighting. I want to say it's December 6th, but since I'm driving, I'm not going to look at my iPhone and get the exact date. You can go to handgunworld.com. That's going to be in San Antonio. The night class is going to be in San Antonio. Ben Branham's AR-specific rifle class is going to be in San Antonio. And let's see. Oh, for all you Houston listeners, if you want to get on the waiting list for the Houston class, email me, bob@handgunworld.com. I will put you on the waiting list. It is a sold-out class, but you never know. It's not till September, so we might have some people that have to back out. There's no backing out within 3 weeks of the class, folks, because with a sold-out class, it would take too long. It'd be too hard for us to fill that spot. So, you know, make sure you're going to go if you're going to sign up. And if you have to cancel, you need to let me know at least 3 weeks prior to the class, okay, in order to be able to get a refund. Let's see. The other thing, we might open up another Houston class. We might have another one in February. So for those of you on the waiting list, if you don't get in on the one in September, you'll be the first ones to get spots in the class that we're teaching, the Beyond Concealed Carry class in February. We don't have it set yet. We don't have it 100% set yet. So just kind of hang with me because it might be something where hopefully we can get that date nailed down, but I can't guarantee it yet. Okay, next, the 1911 versus striker-fired pistol test is going pretty good. I shot IDPA with one of my 1911s. You know what? I didn't do very well, but it wasn't the gun's fault, and it wasn't the safety's fault, and it wasn't it wasn't the 1911 platform's fault. I'm liking the 1911 platform. So, there's been one time that I've missed the thumb safety, just because I'm not used to training with my 1911s as much as I am with my striker-fired guns. I'm also doing a Glock and M&P test. I now have three M&Ps. I have an M&P Pro that I'm going to be using for IDPA. I have an M&P 9 Compact. And I also have a new M&P Shield with no safety, a 9mm M&P Shield with no safety. So I got three M&Ps and some Glocks. And so I'm going to be switching back and forth between those to see which ones I like and reporting the results to you. But 1911 versus striker fire. I'm beginning to think at this point in my one-year experiment, that you can switch between platforms if you shoot them a lot. Or at least I can. I'm reporting to you my results. It's up to you to make your own decision. But if you shoot them a lot, I think you can switch between platforms. Sorry about that. Got tongue-tied there for a minute. I don't get how some people say that, you know, that they can't switch back and forth. Maybe it's because they're not shooting each one enough. I haven't had any issues with it. You know, one time, you know, I missed the thumb safety, but that, you know, if I shot that 1911, if I had as many rounds through that as I have through my Glock 19, I probably wouldn't be missing that thumb safety. The whole thing is that you've got to practice, and train. That's what I'm encountering right now during my one-year experiment. Now, I gotta say, I really like my Sig Sauer RCS 1911. That's a sweet little gun, especially, you know, it doesn't cost that much. And I made a couple of small upgrades to it. You know, I put a different recoil spring assembly in there. And, you know, because I put a Wilson Combat recoil spring in there. And I tell you what, it's just it's a sweet, sweet little gun. The way that whole thing is engineered, it's for the money that you pay. I mean, you know, 1911s are typically more expensive than striker-fired guns, and they probably should be. But the Sig Sauer RCS, can't say enough about it. If you want a good 1911 at a reasonable price that's great for concealed carry, you know, that 4-inch barrel and everything, or 4 1/3-inch, whatever it is, it's perfect for me, carrying it in my Concealment Solutions Black Mamba holster. I feel very comfortable with it. I don't feel undergunned or underdefended with that at all. I can't see how you could forget what kind of a pistol you're carrying. I mean, you know, when you make the conscious effort to put a pistol, to carry a pistol on your belt or, you know, wherever you carry it, even if you put it in your pocket, I can't see somebody forgetting, oh, let's see. You know, when a bad guy shows up and you have to defend yourself, I can't see somebody saying to themselves, okay, what pistol am I carrying now? Am I carrying my striker fired, or am I got my 1911, or do I got my pocket pistol? Yeah, I for me, I can't see myself forgetting what I've got. When I put that pistol on, I know what I've put on, and for the rest of that day until I go to sleep, I know what gun I'm carrying. So that's just been my experience for now. I'll report more later. This show is going on long enough, so I'm going to say thanks for tuning in to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. The loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or just a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight and shoot safe, and I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.